Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2752. That's scan number 2752. Okay. I'm Carol Levine. I'm Vice President of NASCA. And NASCA is sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, and also, too, is this show, the Stop Child Abuse Now show. We're going to have a really good show tonight. We have Michelle Bless with us, and that's always a comfort to me because Michelle knows so much, and she and I have a lot in common, too. So tonight we're going to be speaking about domestic violence and how it affects us, what it does to us, and also to domestic violence in the home and how it negative effects it has on children. And I have an awful lot of information on that. And Michelle and I are both domestic violence, you know, survivors. Now, Michelle is all different kinds of things. She's an author. She's from Cincinnati. She is a survivor of severe child abuse, and she is also a licensed counselor. She is a chaplain, an ordained licensed minister. Okay, so she certainly knows what she's talking about. And if you'd like to be a part of this conversation and talk about domestic violence, or maybe learn about domestic violence, how it can really affect the person who's being violated and also the poor children who watch it, and how many times, too, they become victims. So the telephone number here is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. Now, Michelle, I am just so thankful that I was able to get a hold of you, and I want to thank you so much, you know, for coming on the show tonight. Our guest that was supposed to come on, she's not well. And our best goes out to Sharon Higdon-Jones. She's not feeling well. Now, before I start the show, I do want to read the mission statement, okay, that I have. And I want you to listen to what I say, people. We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. Number one is, of course, educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. Presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem, which it is, and it affects everyone. Number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, I'm normally very much into prevention when it comes to child abuse because I feel that if more people were to become involved, okay, there's certainly a lot of awareness out there, Michelle, you know this too, of child abuse now. It's not like it was way back when, like when I wrote my book. There was only one other book on Amazon on memoirs of child abuse, okay? That's it. One. So that meant I made two. The lady hit me first, all right? She got there first. Okay. So today, if you go to Amazon and you look for child abuse, you will find, you know, many books on child abuse. And that is a wonderful thing because, you see, people telling their stories, whether it be through writing, you know, writing a book, whether it be coming on a platform like what we offer here at NASCA, or, you know, through poetry, through their artwork, through their music. I love music. I love to sing. Anyway, through all of that, all those things bring forth awareness to child abuse. And we, the survivors of child abuse, okay, what could be better than to spread the word and to raise that awareness because we walked in those shoes, okay?
Amen.
We've walked in those shoes. Yes, we have. Now, I know with myself, I've worked with police officers. I've been asked to help in certain cases, and I did that. And I've also worked in detention and other places that worked with children and also with adults, okay? And it's because of my background, and Michelle has a tremendous amount of background, too. I mean, she has more than I do. So let me tell you something. If you want to learn about domestic violence, listen to our show tonight. We have a great show. I have a lot of new stats that I've brought up, which I'll get to in a few minutes. But I'm going to start out by introducing Michelle Bless. So many of you know her, okay? And Michelle, you're from Cincinnati, Ohio. You are a licensed counselor. You are a chaplain. You are an ordained licensed minister. And to me, above all, you are a survivor, okay, of all the horrific things. All of the, you know, the things that we go through. And many of us turn to jobs like you and I have had because we so want to help, you know. Statistically speaking, 70% of the time, okay, I've said this before, I'll just say this quickly and then I want to get to you, but and then I have a lot to talk about later, but 70% of people who have been sexually abused, now this is a statistic that was given to me, do not abuse their own children sexually. 30%, however, do. Now, that's still a lot of kids, sorry.
Yes, it is.
Now, then you think about the physical abuse, Now, that, unfortunately, is even higher, the stats on that. So if you were physically abused as a child, many times you're so filled with anger and hatred because you were hit in the head too much or punched in the nose or beaten by belts or whatever you're beaten with or whatever the case might be, you know, in a physical sense, that stays with you. And then, of course, when we mention, when we mention the abuses on this show, the physical, the mental, right, the emotional, those two to me sound pretty much the same, and the sexual and neglect. Right, when you mention all those abuses, when a child goes through that and they don't get help, many times they end up out on the street, they enter drugs themselves. And, of course, I did all that stuff. They become promiscuous, and you can turn to crime, self-harm, the whole nine yards. All right. So enough said about that because we're going to get into a lot of other things here about intimate partner relationships, okay? Quite frankly, the violence that's going on in this world today, okay, since the pandemic and other things that's caused so much strife out on the streets and at the homes, whatever, it's gone up so high and gotten so bad that it's caused so many people to be hurt. And I have so many things to share with you in about 10, 15, 20 minutes, whatever. I'm going to have Michelle talk. And just to show you, you know, just to show you just what the stats are showing today. So these are today's statistics. This isn't from 3 years ago or 5 years ago. No. This is what's going on in our world today, okay? I also have from where it came, all this information. I always make sure to write that down. Okay, Michelle, now you and I both came from backgrounds where we were horribly, horribly sexually abused. And also, too, yes, and also, too, where you were a part of, you saw domestic violence, just like I did, and you saw ritual abuse. You saw all kinds of things. So why don't you tell us, you know, about, you know, what happened to you with that? And also, too, about how it makes us, we choose poorly when we get older, you know, our partners.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That's where even more abuse comes from. Yeah. So go ahead. The floor is yours. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, thank you, my sister. I am Michelle.
Yes.
And, what I want to say is, growing up as a little girl, I grew, you know, we were middle class and well-respected in the community. My dad was highly looked upon, but no one knew what was going on behind closed doors. My dad used to beat my mother. If it wasn't every day, it was every other day. And so myself and my siblings. And I, as the sibling, I was getting it worse than my sister and my brothers. It was very violent. I mean, my dad used to beat my mom so bad that she would lay in a pool of blood. She would crawl to a table when he leaves and bloody and sit at her little table and her Bible, and she would say, God forgive him for he didn't know what he was doing. And I could never understand. That's why earlier as a child and teenager and a young adult, I was an atheist. I didn't believe in God because I would listen to my mom pray for my dad to this being to forgive him, and I couldn't understand that. And she would always say, well, you know, he's a good God, and I still couldn't understand that because I felt like if anything was so good, why weren't we being protected? And, you know, people ask me today, well, why didn't your mom protect you? And I say to them that my mother was a victim of domestic violence. She was battered. She was a battered woman. I mean, viciously beaten, you know. And so there was no one there to protect her. So how was she was able to protect us? She couldn't protect
us. Hold on a second, Michelle. We have
sure.
a caller here, and I want to get them. I have your mic open. 313 area code. Who am I speaking to?
It's Jeff.
Jeff?
Yes.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Where are you from, Jeff?
I'm from Detroit, but I'm in Virginia right now.
Well, okay.
I'm a friend of
Michelle. Well, thank you. Oh, all right. Okay. I'm going to put your name in here and save it then. Welcome to the show. Okay.
Thank
now,
you.
Michelle, yes, sir. Michelle, I'm going to have to stop at times when I see numbers come in. So forgive me, but
no
I have
problem.
To get these names in here because I don't want them to feel like I'm ignoring them or whatever. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead with your story. Go ahead.
So anyway, you know, growing up as a little girl, watching my dad, you know, beat my mother horribly, and he would beat us, me, my sister and my brothers, he would beat us. And I was the one that got the worst of it, you know. And I remember at the age of 2. And you know how we used to wear those onesies? And I remember specifically my first beating from my dad at the age of 2 years old. You know, he picked me up by my onesie and threw me against the wall, and I slid down, you know, the wall. I'll never forget that. Went through different physical, mental, emotional abuse from my dad, and then the sexual abuse came in with my grandfather, my uncle, and a cousin. My grandfather was in the occult. And so I seen a lot of things that little girls shouldn't have seen, a lot of rituals and stuff like that. So by this time, you know, I excelled in school because school was the outlet. It was like going to King's Island, when I wasn't at home. I'm sorry. Give me a second here. Someone asking me for the number to call in. 1 second. Okay, I just did it. So anyway, so I graduated at the age of 15 years old, and then I went into the military at 16. And by when I went in the military, it was like so much freedom being away from home, leaving Cincinnati. But I was a very depressed young lady. I still had all the bruises and scars and mental, you know, where my mind was of what I went through as a little girl. And then I ended up getting raped by my commander in the military. That at that point was where I had a nervous breakdown. So I'm going to go faster and faster because I want to get more to the domestic violence. I witnessed domestic violence all my life as a little girl, a young lady, teenager, by my dad to my mother and towards us as children. And then so I was depressed, and I ended up getting raped by my commander in the military. I ended up getting out of the military. And I want to say this, if you don't talk about it, you don't get help, you end up doing something or using something to medicate what the pain, because you don't want to feel it, you know. Leave that from me. I didn't want to feel all the pain and the scars and the wounds that was within me. I couldn't deal with the constant memories and flashbacks of what I had endured. So I fell into things that I did to medicate, to be numbed. So to go fast forwarding, when I was married, by this time, I was looking for someone to, now this is during this time, I have very low self-esteem. Okay, so when you have low self-esteem, and speaking as far as a woman, I mean, a man could feel this way too, you want someone to love you, you know. You want to feel wanted and needed and loved. So when a person that is broken and they desire that, you miss flags. What do I mean by that? A person can come like a knight in shining armor, you know. He comes and he woos you and he courts you. And I miss all the flags. And what's so interesting, it didn't happen in the first 6 months. I felt like when he wanted to look at my phone or wanted to know where I was at, he was just being protected, not knowing that he was grooming me, you know, to have control.
Okay, hold that thought. Grooming.
Okay.
Hold that thought. We have an 859 area code. Who am I speaking to? The Stop Child Abuse Now show.
My name is Russell Tucson.
I'm sorry, what was your name? I couldn't hear you.
My name is Russell Tucson Jr.
Oh, okay. Are you a friend of Michelle's?
Yeah, well.
That's what
yeah,
I thought. Okay, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, welcome to the show, okay? Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
So I'm going to have Michelle, you know, go on with her story here. Now, tonight we're speaking about domestic violence and what it does to a person, and then also, too, about the children. And I have a lot of statistics that I can share, which are updated. And due to the COVID, it's gotten far worse. But Michelle's doing a fine job here giving us some background on her. And, you know, so thank you for calling in. Okay, Michelle, back to you. Go ahead.
So I didn't realize that during that time he was grooming. A person would groom you, and they will, you know, smile at you, hug on you, and buy you gifts and do all this, and you think it's all good, but you miss all the flags, and I miss all the flags. And mm-hmm. when and I've been married twice, so the marriage I'm speaking of is not my last marriage. I've been divorced since 2014. I'm speaking of the marriage before that. So after the 6 months, I started noticing his behavior that it could have been there from the beginning. I just didn't see it, but I started seeing it and I didn't like it. And so I got so tired of it, I was done. And so I remember I went and he wasn't there at the house because he was supposed to have been at work and I was leaving. So I was just packing as much as I could to leave, and he came into the home. And he said, "Where are you going?" And I said, "I'm leaving. I'm tired. I'm done." So he said, "Okay." And so he left out the room. So I'm still packing, and then I heard my name, Michelle. That's all I remember. Because when he called my name, I thought he was going to say something else. I didn't think that I had to guard myself or go into a defense mode or none of that. I didn't see it coming. So when he said my name and I turned around, that's all I remembered. And when I came to, I was laying in a pool of blood. And I didn't know I was laying in a pool of blood. I just felt wet, and I didn't know what it was. And every time I tried to move my body, it was like I couldn't move. I was in such excruciating agony pain. And so I was able to turn my head a little bit and move. I couldn't move my left arm at all. I'm trying to find out it was broken in two different places, but I moved my right arm, and when I touched my body and looked up, it was nothing but blood, and I'm like, oh, my God. And so I'm hearing this noise, this voice, and it wasn't his voice. It was like something just took over him. It was like another voice was speaking for him. And in my mind, I'm like, oh, my God, this man is crazy. And I'm hearing him in the kitchen. So, but I'm right where I can look up in the kitchen where he was. And he was sharpening knives. And he was talking to himself. And he was saying how he was going to cut me up in different, you know, cut my body up and put my body parts in each garbage bag and drive and throw it in different dumpsters in different communities. And I'm like, oh, my God, you know. So I was able to run out the house, and it was early in the morning. It was no one out. But I didn't know where I was, you know, because he moved me away from my family. That's another thing that a perpetrator or a person like that would do. They would move you away from the city, from your family. They would discommunicate you from your family. So I didn't know anyone over there. And as I ran, all I saw was a mailman outside. And I ran to this mailman, and I mean, I'm bloody. I'm like, he was like, oh, my God, what happened? I said, please call the police. Please help me. And he said, I don't want to have anything to do with that. Please get away from me. This is what the mailman said. So I turned around, and here he comes. You know, my ex, my first husband, he was 6'4", and he grabbed me and threw me over his shoulder and took me back in the house and dropped me head first. I was out.
Oh, Lord Jesus.
Came to again. I don't know how long I was out. At first, I came to again, and he's still in the kitchen talking to himself, sharpening knives. And so I said, God, I said, God, I forgive me, because I was just new. At this time, I need to say that I was just new. I was new in Christ. So I was a baby, you know what I'm saying, like an infant. So new to the word, new to having a relationship. But I have already seen signs and miracles from God. And so I just cried out and said, God, you told me that there was so much that I was going to do in my life. And I'm talking to God in my mind. And so I said, God, if you get me out of this, I will go back home. I mean, come back to Ohio. And I would rededicate my life to you. And I would serve you. And the next thing I know, and I don't care, nobody don't believe me, but this is my truth. I was lifted up off that floor because apparently he had beat me more. So I couldn't even move. I was lifted. And then I heard his voice that, go to the door. Went to the door, the door unlocked. When I went out, and by this time, I was already out the door, and he saw me leave again. But this time, the whole street was filled with people, and cars were coming up and down the street. And I started screaming, and people was running over there. And they were like, oh, my God. And he came, and I dropped in the middle of the street. And I said, this time, I mean, somebody's going to have to help me. So I seen a fire, no, an ambulance coming. And they stopped, and they got out. And they was like, what in the H is going on? He grabbed me by my hair, and he's dragging me. And I'm like, don't let him take me back. He's going to kill me. He's going to kill me, you know. And he dragged me back into the house, threw me on the floor this time. He didn't drop me. He just threw me. And it seemed like it was forever, but it wasn't. It was like the next thing I heard was bang, bang, bang on the door. They were like, this is the Louisville, Kentucky Police Department. We know there's a woman that's been dragging this house, and she's kidnapped. We're going to kick this door in. He don't open the door. Mm-hmm. He opened the door. And it took four police officers to handcuff him. And they got me out of that house. So to make this story short, when they took me to the hospital, as they were taking me in the ambulance, I saw him dart. He got away from the police and escaped. So they had police officers at the hospital with me, guarding the door. After they saw me in the emergency room, there was no way I was leaving. They had to take me upstairs. I was in the hospital for like 2 or 3 weeks before they took me to a safe house. I had 76 injuries. They took 76 pictures of 76 injuries. And when my mom found out, the news found out, and they reported the wrong thing on the news about me. They said on the news, a local woman was found hanging on a tree dead.
Oh,
and they said my
gosh.
Name. And my mom had a heart attack and a stroke at the same time. So my mom's in the hospital. I'm in the hospital. I'm in a safe house. I'm in a whole different city and state. To make a long story short, they kept me in a safe house for 2 months after I got out of the hospital. We went to court, and that was the strongest I felt for the first time that I was able to look at this person and not be afraid. I remember the judge saying, this is the most horrific domestic violence case I ever seen in my city. And they gave him 40 to life.
Good.
And he's still in prison. So that was number God. So I came
back to
Ohio, and I haven't looked back since as far as – so that was my horrific domestic violence situation.
There's enough for 10 people. That's awful, Michelle.
That was in a marriage. Now, when I was in a relationship, let's go back when I was in the world. I didn't know God, and I was in a relationship with a guy, and we lived together. And he worked for GE, and he was one of the guys that would climb up on the pole, and he fell off the pole. He fell, hurt his back, and so he had to get compensation and had to be at home. And they gave him so much strong medication. And I remember the doctor was saying to me and him, you know, this medicine is going to alter your mind also. So be very careful. Don't overtake. Obviously, he overtook, and he started having these different mood swings. He was like Jekyll and Hyde. Mm-hmm. And then there was a deja vu. I was in the kitchen cooking, heard my name, and that's all I remember. When I woke up, I was laying in the pool of blood with my little girl. She's 30-something years old now, so I'm going to let you know how far how long ago this was. She was 5 at the time, okay? Crying. She was leaning against the wall crying and looking at me. And so I grabbed her, but I felt wet. Deja vu, you know? I looked at her, and she had blood on her. I didn't know the blood came from me and went and transferred to her. I thought he hurt it, my job. So we had an iron lamp. It weighed roughly about 150 pounds. I weighed a buck one, 101 pounds, wet or closed. I was that little. And all I saw was rage. And I picked up this iron lamp, and I waited behind the wall. And when he came out that room, it wasn't me possible were able to lift this thing. I had just got strength. When we are like a bear, and a bear protect his cub. So it's like you don't care what's going on with you. When I saw blood on my child, keep in mind, I didn't know the blood came from me, and she's screaming, I was enraged. And I lift this iron lamp and clubbed him on his head, knocked him out, grabbed my daughter, ran out, and drove to the police station. And when I bust through the police station doors, I'm seeing them running from behind a desk, running towards me. One grabbed my daughter and they said, oh, my God, what happened to you? I didn't even look in the mirror. I didn't know what was going on. So I had a broken jaw, a broken arm, and a concussion and some other injuries that I can't remember. Now, this situation, they took me to the hospital. They called my family. They came and got my daughter, and then they took me home. They already had arrest warrants for him. We come in the house. He got a candlelight dinner going on, and he's sweeping. And when he saw me, he was like, oh, my God, baby, what happened to you? This freaky frat guy didn't really know. He didn't know what he did, he claimed. I'm a fast forward. They took him to jail. I got a divorce. Got in front of the judge, and he's booing and crying, saying, and he had his attorney there and a doctor, you know. He was trying to force the judge to make us go to counseling because he did not want a divorce. And the judge was like, well, according to the doctor, he had blackout. He don't even remember what he did. And I said, you know, I'm sorry to hear that. But I'm not going to risk my life and he have another one and then I'll die for my child. So it's over. And I told him, all I want is my name back. I'm done. So that was the end of that domestic bout. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's terrific. That's terrific.
Yeah.
You know, let me, I'll tell you, that's quite a story. Two stories there. Your friend from 859 area code, would you like to make a comment about that? What Michelle's talking about? Have you ever heard of people, you know, having such violent, so much volatile relationships as that?
I mean, not anyone that I can say that I know of, you know, that I can't really think of, you know, but definitely there's so much going on out here in this world today.
I know, it's terrible.
Not,
yeah. But you know what? Let me fast forward ahead a little bit. Jeff just said he had to drop. He's sorry. But anyway, what I'm trying to get across here tonight, Michelle, thank you so much for sharing that, because people need to know who, you know, maybe they came from backgrounds where the house was great. Okay, there wasn't any. You know, fighting, physical fighting like that. And, you know, it's maybe they just had sort of like normie type of homes, as I call it, because I certainly didn't have one. You didn't have one. I don't know if you have one. You know, this friend of yours here. I don't know. But I can tell you this. I do have something that I do want to get into, because we have to get in also some stats here, and then I'll go back to you, and then also, too, about how the type of abuse that I had to go to. All right, first of all,
right.
Everyone out there, with the intimate partner abuse, okay, it is skyrocketing right now. It started to skyrocket in 2020. And when the pandemic hit, and there's people that had to stay in the house, they were losing their jobs and all this other stuff, the violence in the home has an overall cost to society, and it's leading to potential adverse physical, mental outcomes, including a higher risk of chronic disease, substance abuse, depression, PTSD, and risky sexual behaviors. Now, this is from an organization called SAMHSA, and that's for Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration, okay? Now, it says here, furthermore, they want to get it across very, very strongly that victims of domestic violence, including, you know, intimate partner, you know, relationships and child abuse, are at the greatest risk for injuries, including death. Now, Michelle, without getting into too much right there this second, because I want to continue with this, you were very close at times, especially that one time, okay? my God, okay? So it says here, in 1 in 4 women and nearly in 1 in 10 men have experienced, you know, sexual violence, physical violence, and stalking from their partner. So you see, it's not just women. I want to get that across. Men too can have problems. No, the ratio is different. You know, there are more women that are abused, but there are men also too that have a high risk of abuse. Depends on the situation. Depends on the people involved. But it says here, moreover, than 43 million women, and close to that, in men, have experienced psychological aggression by their intimate partner. And again, it is almost important to acknowledge, you know, that this abuse can be physical injury that is so bad that it leads to death. And it does say data from U.S. crime reports suggests that 16, approximately, that's 1 in 6, are homicides. Now, this is updated, all right? This is from 2020 to 2021. And what's happening is, you know, when the police go to a door, because like the police you were talking about, Michelle, when you go to doors, and because you received the call because there's terrible violence going on, what happens is that the police don't know ahead of time what they're walking into. Hey, that guy, the first guy you were telling me about, he had a whole bunch of knives and he was sharpening them. He was gonna stab you all over the place. Well, he can do that also, too, with the police officers. A lot of times there's guns involved. Now, I grew up in a house full of guns. I'm not afraid of guns. I know how to use guns. And they were hunters. That's why they had guns. So they didn't use them. And I always say about guns, I'm going to get this out. The person that pulls the trigger is the problem, okay? The gun is a weapon, yes. But it's not made into a weapon until the person who's using the gun makes it a weapon. All right?
Exactly.
So, because when I grew up, they were all hunters on the one side of the family, and they didn't hurt anyone. Now, that's my little take on that one. I get a little annoyed when I hear about it. Okay. So, violence in the home has an overall cost to society. And another thing that it's adding to is the PTSD. You see, whether you're a child or whether you are an adult. You know, post-traumatic stress disorder, that started from the service. And Michelle, you would know this. You know, especially after World War II, they started realizing and talking about PTSD. They started becoming a little bit more aware. And then, of course, as years went by, and with the other things that we were involved in, with the Vietnam thing, and then after that, the Desert Storm, all these things, you know, unfortunately, our soldiers would come home with PTSD. And now they're finding out, too, studies do show that children who witness horrific violence in the house, like what you're talking certainly about with your first case there, my God, that was just terrible. Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
A child witnessing that, or in my case where I saw it every night for a couple of years anyway, from age four mm-hmm. to six with my father, pounding my mother almost to death almost every night. She wasn't a nice
yeah.
person either. I didn't know that till later on. But
mm-hmm.
the point is, they didn't know I was watching, Michelle, okay? And then finally they did realize, and I remember mopping my mother's face that was full of blood off. And one day she took me over to the phone and she said, "Come here, my brave little girl. I want to teach
mm-hmm.
you how to use the phone. And then next time when Daddy gets like that, you call the police, okay?"
Mm-hmm.
So she taught me how to use the phone. And it wasn't too hard in those days, okay? So, but anyway, that was my job then. It became my job. Oh, my God. Well,
can I add something?
Long story. It was horrible. It was horrific. My brother was upstairs under the covers. He was almost 5 years my senior, and he wasn't going to get involved with that, honey. Oh, no. So, anyway... It became my job, and I saw all this horrific stuff, and it took me a long time. I still jump if someone gets too close to me. We'll talk about that
mm-hmm.
in a second, the hypervigilance.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's a heavy thing to lay on a kid, too, if you think about it. I'm 5 years old by that time, almost six, because that was next to the last time that my father almost killed my mother. He was going to hit her in the head the last time. With the skillet, and if he did that, the black, the black heavy skillets, he would have killed her, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I screamed. He didn't know that I was watching at that point, and I said, "No, Daddy, no!" And he spun around, and he glared at me with a maniacal look on his face, and I couldn't move. I was a statue.
mm-hmm.
You know, I was, you have the fight, flight, and flee. Really, I couldn't flee. I couldn't do anything. I was just frozen. I was frozen.
Right.
And I figured he was going to hit me. So he came over, and he lifted me up, and he smashed me against the stairwell. And I remember feeling every bone in my back. Okay. Every bone I could feel because he smashed me so hard. And then he dropped me like a rag doll, and he left the house, and he closed the door, and, like city doors, a lot of times they have glass in them, right, a lot of glass, that big pane of glass.
Mm-hmm.
He slammed it so hard that all the glass just shattered, and I remember being able to turn myself away from the door because I didn't want to get hit by glass. It was flying through the air.
Mm-hmm.
He was a big man. He weighed 240, from what I was told. And my mother only weighed 95 pounds.
Right.
She couldn't eat, you see. This is how it affects people. She couldn't
eat. That's right.
So that's like it was yesterday. See, what people have to realize is that when you are a child, and I was lucky he didn't hit me over that last time. That was bad enough. Smashing me so hard. To this day, I have back problems, Go to chiropractors
mm-hmm.
at times because I hurt. So, but anyway, the point is this. We don't forget that.
Nope.
All right?
Not at all.
Now, your little girl, what she saw, you said that she was five, and that's about what I was. I wasn't quite six in that house yet.
Mm-hmm.
So we were the same age. And I don't know if she witnessed, okay, what happened to you? I know that time after time after time after time, I snuck downstairs and I saw what was going on. It always took place in the kitchen. Kitchen is a very dangerous place. That's where the knives are, okay? Think about
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I have all these visions at times, even of that particular night, which is only a minute part of the things that I've seen throughout my life.
Mm-hmm.
So, when we speak about, the danger, all right, of intimate partner abuse, all these things can happen, and that's why through the studies of the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration, they speak about, how it can absolutely turn into, death.
Yeah.
And the data shows, the U.S. crime report suggests that 16%, and that would be approximately 1 in 6, are homicide.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think you were going to say something.
I was going to say, look at the stats today. Since the COVID, now we're going into the second year of the COVID.
And that's what this is from the
I have
the
so many clients that call me that have either witnessed or is dealing with domestic violence in the home. I mean, like, the perpetrator, you know, since they, you know, when the whole country shut down, oh, my God, it has gotten worse in the home, total isolation, and now the perpetrator is so used to their wife being in the home, even though they open up the city a little bit, they won't even allow them outside. If the ones that are still alive.
That's right.
They're really suffering. There's so many women that have died from domestic violence since the COVID. So many children that have died COVID. It's such a tragedy. That's why me and Carol is here. You know, when I share my story, a lot of people say, how can you talk about that easy? I mean, I'm healed from it. And then, too, it happened over 30-something years ago. You know what I'm saying? So
what I
went through, God turned our tragedy into triumph, because we're here today not only as survivors, but to help other people, to let them know that you're not alone, you know. If there's a way that you can get on a phone or send an email to someone to let someone know that you're in trouble, it's, I mean, the police today, oh, they'll come in a minute. And I want to – that reminds me, I want to piggyback on something you said, Carol, when you said that your mom asked you to come here because she wanted to teach you how to call the police. Well, in my city and state, when I was a little girl, that was such a norm for women to be beaten in their homes. Police didn't do anything.
Right.
I mean, you know, I'll never forget when the police was called. And my dad went out there and said, you know, we got to keep our women in place. And the police were like, yeah, you're right. And they left. So we never had the thought of calling the police, because after being called 1, 2, 3 times and they didn't do anything, because it was a quote-unquote norm thing, they stayed out of the business of that. I thank God that that has changed today in the 21st century.
Yes.
You know, you can, the police will help. You can. Let me say this. I am an advocate for women in domestic violence. So I go to regular shelters for women and also safe houses. They have safe houses for women who life is threatened, and we have to hide them. You know what I'm saying? But all you got to do is go to, you can go anywhere. If you're scared, get away from the situation. Go into anything that's open, any business, you know, and just tell them to call the police. You know, go into a hospital, go to a fire department, go to the police station. Just go anywhere and just tell someone to call the police, and the police will come. And I thank God for that. And we do have places that, I mean, the perpetrator will and have program and brainwash women to say, I don't care where you go, I'm going to find you, this, this, that, and the other. I'm telling you, if you are for real and you want to get away from your perpetrator, all you got to do is call Women Helping Women Line, and we will hide you, and we will help you to begin a new life. You will never have to ever have to go back to abuse again. And one more thing, Carol, I want to say that there are men that have suffered domestic violence from women. I could not believe that. Okay, I thought that was a joke. I'm gonna be honest. Until I met one, and he was so little and frail, like he didn't even weigh 100 pounds, and he had pictures of his wife in his phone, and she looked like a freaking football player. You know.
Yeah.
And she would beat him. Like, he suffered for 8 years till he finally got tired and he left. And he was so ashamed because it's like, who can, you know, he said he was ashamed because how can he go in and tell a police officer his wife has beaten him? And he said he felt like it just took away from his manhood. He just felt so stripped from being a man. And this man had a broken arm, black eye, broken nose. I mean, it was horrible.
It can happen, Michelle. Let's see what your friend thinks here. Go ahead. It's just the three of us right now, so I have the mics open. So go ahead.
Okay.
Do you know of anyone in your family, say, or have you ever been a part of domestic violence or anything like that?
No. Nobody in my family. I got a brother and a sister. They're both younger than me. My parents are still happily married and together, and I've never seen my father, do anything physically to hurt my mother. I had disagreements or something like that, but even like
my father, you never had to experience that.
My father has three brothers and a sister, and all of his brothers are married. His older brother is a minister. And my grandparents, I mean, you know, same thing. I never, like, witnessed any abuse, like, you know, physical abuse. And so when I'm hearing these stories, I didn't know what I was getting into as far as this phone call, but it's horrific. I mean, I'm the type of person, I love sports and I played sports since I was a kid, but when I'm watching, like, say, football or even basketball, for example, and I see someone get hurt and they just show the replay, I can't look at it. It just does something to me to see somebody get hurt. It's just sad.
Well, you know what, Russell? I want to say this to you that, you know, I'm glad that you never had grew up and experienced anything like that, but I'm glad you're here to hear that this, it does exist and this stuff is going on. People that, you know, they need, you know, this is where people need to have compassion and know that people are out here suffering. There are women. What is it, Carol? Is that, is it like every 12 minutes or something that a woman is being beaten?
Yes, I think it's less than that now. Just listen.
You know,
go ahead.
Breaks my heart. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Breaks my heart. Or a child is being beaten every 12, 15 minutes. Somebody's being beaten. And then, too, it's like if you ever run into someone, which you never know, that you don't know who God's going to bring in your path that might be experiencing some trauma. You can always tell them, well, I know a number that you can call in and talk to some people. They do a radio show. This is what we're here for. You know what I'm saying? Is to help people who suffer trauma. It's not only, I mean, it's domestic violence, sexual child abuse, but it's also depression, suicide. I mean, we deal with all types of trauma because guess what? Trauma exists. And there are people that are so alone and so they feel so alone and isolated. They feel like no one cares. You know, no one wants to listen.
That's the problem. That's the problem, Michelle.
Yeah.
You know, people feel hopeless. They feel not worthy, you know, when they come from backgrounds like ours. And, you know, I'm going to tell you something and then I'll get into something else. But it says here, since we were talking about the children, we should speak about the children, too. There have been approximately 130,000 reports. This is to DCFS hotline, all right, services of child abuse. And that was in Chicago, and that was in the late 2020, so it wasn't quite 21 yet. Now, I know that since that time, it has even gone up more. And pre-existing mental conditions during COVID, the stress, the anxiety, and children at home, you know, with the intimate parties, you know, like the mother and the boyfriend, the mother, father, whatever. Children are becoming aggressive or, you know, when they're watching all of this, or they internalize their distress by using alcohol and drugs. That's the ones that are a little bit older. Their schoolwork mm-hmm. suffers. Maybe they're truant. They don't go to school anymore. They do cutting. They do self-harm. Mm-hmm. They have mm-hmm. eating disorders. And, mm-hmm. and, of course, those, unfortunately, with suicidal thoughts, many times, you know, will go through it. And you wonder, gee, why did he do that or she do that, okay? Well, look at their homes. I always say, we have another caller, I always say, go into the homes, you know, social workers, go into the homes. I know this because I went to homes, not that I'm a social worker, I was a counselor. I want to see who this is here. Hold on a second.
Go ahead.
Yeah. The 504 area code, who am I speaking to? Oh, it's John Anderson. How you doing? He put his own name
good.
In there. Thank
you.
You. Okay.
You're welcome.
That's good. Okay.
Sorry, I'm a little late.
Yeah,
guys.
I'm glad you're here. I'm talking about the children and what they go through, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And those kids who are right on the border, okay, of, you know, they're so feeling so hopeless and helpless, okay.
Yeah.
What they do many times is, seeing this abuse between mommy and daddy or mommy and boyfriend, and unfortunately, the mommy and boyfriend, that seems to be the most abusive because a lot of times they abuse the children too, okay? They've stats have shown that. Yes. And so what happens is these kids, they either run away from home, they become drug addicts out in the street, they get pimped out on the street. Oh, my God. Let me tell you something. There are approximately 200,000 American children that are being trafficked into sex industry right here, and that's from the U.S. Justice Department. Now, 200,000, think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Approximately 200,000 American children. Mm-hmm. Now, the ones... Yeah, check this out. So children, an estimated 14,500 to 17,500 foreign nationals are trafficked into the United States. Now, I'm not allowed to get political here, but believe me, honey, I have a whole bunch to say about that, but I'm not going to.
Yeah.
But think about where that's coming from. So you do the math. You have 200,000 American children. And you have 14,500 to 17,500 children that are from foreign countries. All of these children, this is from state.gov reports. So you have all of these children, and these are current. So you have all of these children that are being trafficked out because they're running, the ones, the United States kids, a lot of times are running away, you know, from situations that are horrific at home, like what you were describing before, and
mm-hmm.
what I saw. And then also, too, I was horribly sexually and physically and mentally and emotionally abused and neglected, and I ran away from home, too. And then when it came
mm-hmm.
time, I did what so many girls back then did. I decided I'm going to get married, by God. That's what I'll do.
Mm-hmm.
That'll solve everything. All right?
Yeah.
But I didn't know how to choose because what did I have as to look back on? A father that was almost killing my mother, and you the same thing, okay? So unbelievable. So we don't know how to choose. We didn't have any heroes in our life, okay? We didn't have those
mm-hmm.
heroes. We had no one to look up to. So we make two poor choices. I made two. And, yes, especially with my first husband, he almost killed me. He was strangling me. And
mm-hmm.
had his father not stayed overnight that night, and he was out in his camper. He had a camper, and he was living in that camper. He decided to come in the house. He saw what was going on. And I was reaching around again in the kitchen, Michelle. I was reaching
mm-hmm.
around. And I was reaching for a knife that I knew that was on the stove. We'd had a party that night. It was New Year's
right.
Eve, and all the people had left except for my father-in-law, thank God. And
mm-hmm.
I was going to stab him. I didn't care where I stabbed him because I had two children, okay? And
mm-hmm.
I could feel myself going under. And his father knocked the knife out of my hand and broke the hold around my neck. And had he not done that, I would have died. I felt myself going under. And so I managed to get myself into another room, and he and his father went at it. And my first husband passed out because he had drank so much. And I think maybe his father hit him in the head, too. I'm not sure, because I wasn't seeing too straight, okay? So he helped me to go upstairs into the bedroom, his father did, and he said, "You two have got to get away from each other." He said, "I just saved your life." And I said, "Yes, you did." And he stayed until about 9 o'clock in the morning, and he spoke to my first husband and I, and he said, "That's it. You're done." And we did get divorced.
You know, I am so keen and very observant when I'm out in public. I remember I was in a grocery store, and I seen this young lady. She looked like a Mexican. She had like four kids and one inside the cart, but she had two black eyes.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, my God. And so I befriended her, and I was praying like, "God, I hope she speaks English." She did, and how I did that, I started talking to the kids, and kids gravitate to me, you know. So I was like, "Oh, you know," I was talking to the kids, and she was like, "Oh, thank you, you're so kind." And I said, "You know, I am a advocate for domestic violence." So she stopped and she looked at me, and she said, "Okay." I said, "Do you want to be set free?" And she said, "Excuse me?" I said, "Do you want to be set free?" I said, "If you tell me right," I said, "Is he here?" She said, "No, he's at home." And I don't have long. I don't have long. He gives me so much time to shop. I said, "Do you want to be set free?" She said, "You know," and I'm walking with her. She said, "I tried to get help before, and I didn't get no help, and I had to go back to him, and he beat me real bad." And I said, "If you tell me right now you want help, you do not have to go back to him."
That's right.
I said, "You do not have to go back to him." I said, I can take you right now, you and your children, and you would, and I would and I can have you disappear." And she looked at me, she said, "Why do you want to do that?" And I said, "Because looking at you is like looking at me, but it was 30-something years ago."
That's right.
That lady let
That's
me help
right.
her.
Okay. Now, look, I want John to respond, too. But before we do that, John, we have a 513 area code that just called in.
Yeah.
I want to see who they are. Hold on. Let me get their mic open.
Sure. Okay.
513 area code. This is Carol Levine from the Stop Child Abuse Now show. Who am I speaking to? Hello? 513?
They probably just want to listen.
That's you. I don't know why that moved down there. That didn't make sense.
I'm sorry, what?
Wait a minute. It's 513-324-6796.
Yeah, there's two.
Oh, yeah. Hello?
Oh, okay.
If they push one, if they didn't push one, they're probably just going to listen, Carol.
Okay. Well, okay. So if you have something you want to say, just push one, and I'll certainly bring you on. So what we're talking about here is, yes, today we do have a tremendous amount of, you know, programs out there. One thing I do want to get across before I get any further, and I have to hurry up, and then I want John to speak, and then we'll pretty soon we'll be able to wrap the show up. We had an interesting show tonight, John, because Michelle shared a lot of things that she went through with the intimate partner relationships and just how bad it can get. And I only shared a tiny bit of what happened to me. But what I want to get across here is with the children, okay? This is very, very important also because, you know, with children, again, I'm going to go over this a little bit more. When children are watching this or they get hit, okay, they become the victim also. Children may become so aggressive, they turn into juvenile delinquents. Well, I used to work in juvie, okay? Yes. Well, and if they don't get the help that they need, and I mean, I worked in a facility that was locked down, and we had police there because they had committed adult crimes, these kids. You know, and we had an 8-year-old safe cracker. That's so funny.
Wow.
It was not really. She was 8 years old, and her daddy would use her, okay? He was a cleaning man who'd go in, maintenance, and he knew where the safes were and all this other stuff.
Are you serious?
He would use the little girl. I'm serious for real, okay?
Oh,
this is how. Oh, yes, honey. So he would, you know, smash a window. Now, I'm thinking, where are the alarm systems of this place? I don't know how he did it. I wasn't there. But he got the kid inside, and he taught her a certain way of opening, you know, to you know, the dial on these safes and so forth. And, you see, if she got caught, she would only go where? She'd go to juvenile detention.
Mm-hmm.
If he got caught, he would go to jail. We're talking about the age difference here, okay?
Yeah,
now,
exactly.
That's ridiculous. So we, of course, mm-hmm. didn't keep her in juvie long. We did a background check into her family, and what her father had her doing, for God's sake. She doesn't belong with them anyway. So I had to take her before the courts, and then, you know, DIFAS got involved and so forth, and she was placed. And I'm hoping that it was a good home that she was placed in. Okay, that's all I can say, foster mm-hmm. care. Okay, mm-hmm. John, what do you have to say about all this so far?
There's a lot. Actually, there's a person that comes to mind whenever I hear about this, and it's Angela Maskevich. Do you remember Angela?
I've heard of her, yes.
She would be one to really, really have such an impact on the same situation, you know. And what one of her things, too, was exactly what you know, Michelle just said about spotting, you know, really about recognizing the situation, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
how crucial is that for you to step in and make somebody's life change like that, which can happen. It happens every day. And it takes somebody to recognize what it is, you know, and by recognizing that, you change in the world, girl. You know, there's no question about that, you know. So Angela Maskevich is definitely about prevention as far as, like, any type of human trafficking goes. She's not with us tonight, but that was her big thing, too, you know. And I'm with that also. I'm always looking out for that in every aspect, whether it be physical marks or even mental and, you know, there's so much types of abuse, right, with kids. A lot of kids are shy. They don't want to speak up. They can't speak up. They're threatened along with the wives a lot, you know. So they live in shame. They live in fear, you know. But it's going to take us. It's going to take us to stop that. And it can happen. Just like she said, it can happen one day just by asking. You know, if you walk away from it, you're walking away from what we stand for. You know, this is the difference in who we are today versus where we were 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Now the world is listening, aren't they? Before they wouldn't. You know, now they want to listen. And they have no choice but to listen because you save lives by doing that very same thing. And that's what
it is.
Yeah,
we're
going to
be a whistleblower.
Yep, that's exactly it.
Well,
you know,
right.
I'm very proud of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right.
Let me say something here, John. Now, okay, you're both saying both the same thing, only in a little different light, and I can add to it so it becomes one light. Okay. Whistleblower, that's a good thing. I'm a whistleblower, too, and I'm proud of it. And, John, you're saying that today, because of the things that we see and so forth, and because of what we've been through, We have like antennas on our head. You know what I'm saying? We know when something isn't quite right. We know it.
Yep.
And we can do
one
or two things. And this is going into what you were saying, John. We can do one or two things. We can either help and become someone's hero, maybe, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Or we can turn and walk away. Now, today, society has a lot more awareness than certainly what they did, say, I don't know, 5-10 years ago. And and also, too, we do have a lot more groups out there, but we have to get the system to work. Okay, that's my beef right there. Because when I would take kids before the judge, and I wasn't the only one, we took turns over at detention, But before, mm-hmm. To see if they were going to go back into the home from which they came or if they were going to go into a foster care, a lot of times the judge and the other people involved, the social workers that were working with the case and also whomever, depending on what the kid did, again, they committed adult crimes. So you're going to have prosecutors and so forth. Okay, all right. So sometimes they would say, go back home. Oh, no, so many times that would be the wrong choice because the kid would get murdered at home. He was already, or she was already being beaten, okay? So there are times when foster care, certainly, and you again, I pray to God that the kids find good foster care. Unfortunately, we know of kids that haven't found good foster care, and again, those are the ones that are going to run out into the streets that I used to meet because I was out on the streets, and Michelle, you too, okay? We were out on the streets, and we were out there, and we saw the same kids. You know, they came from very dysfunctional backgrounds, and we were all homeless at different points in our life. So you see, you know, this is what happens. You know, when there's so much horror at home. When there's horror at home, the foundation of the house is going to fall apart, okay? And the kids are a part of that foundation. They're a part of that foundation.
Right.
It's a part of their fabric. And what they do is they grow up, and if they make it, and they remember what they saw. And to some, like you said much earlier on, Michelle, a lot of those kids think that that's normal, and it's not normal behavior.
But when
we
However,
we have to remember this too. When it comes to the pedophiles, they know that what they're doing is wrong. They know it. They watch TV. They see things on the internet. They have that terrible organization out there. Was it Nambula? There's those terrible, the dark webs, the black webs, whatever you call them, the webs. Listen here. I have no empathy or sympathy in my heart for those people because they don't care what they're doing to their victims, their children, our children. We, the people, as we've grown up, they don't care. Okay? So I think that when I say that the system needs to be changed, there's so many ways. That's why we have people working on the statute of limitations. And we have so many people, you know, that are working in this department and that department trying to help make things better because they know that it's not right. But it seems like the wheels of justice turn slow, so slowly.
Too slow.
So it's awful. So what I want to get out here, because, boy, this show went fast. What I want to get out here, and I want to get back to John and then back to your friend. I can't hear his name on my phone. And then also to Michelle. What I want to get out here is about NASCA. We do have something on our website. People, if you're in trouble, there's two things on the website. First of all, I'm the mouse. I'm the owl, too. I'm mostly the night owl. You can call me, and I do get called all the time in the a.m. That's okay. That's what, and you, too, Michelle. So they can call you, too, okay? And we are listed on the contact list. We're there. There's other names there, too. You can call, you know, we the people here on this list because, quite frankly, this is how we try to help. And now, one thing that I do use on our website an awful lot, if a person doesn't have a therapist, and that's a job in itself, getting the right therapist, someone who understands child abuse, who's going to help you with your issues, okay? One thing that we do offer, too, are programs. And that's on the very first left side. You will see everything that's it's named. And programs is one of them. On the left side, you don't even have to scroll down far. It's right there. There are red lines, and each one has all different kinds of information. On the left-hand side are the programs. Click onto it. If you need to join a group, say you don't have insurance, you don't have money, you can't afford a therapist, but you need people, We have the programs over there. Right now I'm in New Jersey. I wasn't born in New Jersey. I was born in New York. But I'm in New Jersey. And so I would click down. I would scroll down to New Jersey because it's all alphabetical. And I would click on to New Jersey. Okay? I would click on to that. You would be surprised how many programs are for people like we, okay? Those of us who have been sexually, physically, mentally, emotionally neglected and abused, period, okay? All the abuses that we speak about. They mm-hmm. have those programs. They are available. They don't have signs outside, okay? So that's why I always talk about it. Yeah, we don't, you know, they don't advertise themselves. And certainly with shelters for women or men, whomever's being beaten, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. There's no sign outside that's going to say shelter because it's supposed to be hidden. It's supposed to be secret, sort of like so that your spouse, your the person who's abusing you can't find you, okay, whatever. So these programs are very, very important. And just recently I've received phone calls again from men, and they had gone to the programs and they had found a program in their area. It can be all over the United States. We get calls all over the United States. And I got one from Chicago the other day, 2 days ago. So it doesn't matter where you live. The point is the information is available to you. So I'm making it available to you right now to point it out to you. Go to, you know, NASCA, NASCA.org. That's NASCA.org. If you go to our website, you will find what I just told you about. Look under programs. There's programs there to teach you how to speak to your children about the perverts out there, how to keep your children safer.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we want to do. That's where prevention comes in. We speak about prevention, intervention, and recovery. Prevention is something that I work very heavily with because I feel that if we get people out there to care, okay, and to understand, hey, if your house got broken into, don't hate the kid. Maybe the kid came from a horrible home. That's probably the case, okay? We have to, when we see something, say something. Don't
just
stand there.
It
all works together. Yes, it does. It all works together.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say something.
And I want John to say something, too. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm just going to say this real quick. You know, this show has been, we've been talking about domestic violence. So if there's anyone listening or in the chat room or anything like that, and you are being violated by your partner, you can call, you know, you can call the hotline. They have a crisis hotline that you can call for women helping women. If your life is in danger, you can go to any local hospital, emergency room. They will put you in the social worker office, and then they will call someone from the safe house. The safe house is not listed. No one can find it, not even the police. And one of the workers will come and get you and take you to the safe house, and you will be safe. No one knows where it is except people like you, that work for them literally. But that's it. You will absolutely be safe. You know, that's what they're there for.
Awesome.
That's exactly right.
Yes,
that's exactly right.
And
so,
Carol,
okay.
Listen, that's Wendell that's calling in. That's his first name.
Yeah, I'm opening up his
mic
now, honey.
Yeah, before we bring Wendell on, I have two things that I just want to share real quick, okay? First of all, I do have a hotline. I do have a hotline for children that are being abused in every which way, including trafficking, okay? This is their main thing, but I'm gonna go ahead and give you this number, okay? It's 1-833-274-8433, okay? And that is for children's, you know, support line as far as human trafficking goes and any type of abuse, okay? And also, the second thing that I wanted to share with you all is that on our show, we had on our number 2750 show, we had a gentleman by the name of Alan Stamps, okay?
Yes,
Alan is out
do.
Of Bay City, Michigan, okay? Mm-hmm. Alan is a god as far as I can see things in my eyes because of what he does. He does exactly mm-hmm. what we're talking about. He takes kids on. He has foster programs. He is in the thick of it. He's out of the Detroit area. Think about it. You know, this is extensive. So he is always available, you know, for support or guidance, you know, for that matter. And
so those
two, you know, are two people that I would heavily recommend for any situation that's going on with what we're talking about tonight, you know.
Okay.
So, you know, without that, I just want to tell y'all that I love y'all very much, and I'm going to be here every day, and whatever I can do to help anyone. And I'm just going to leave it at that, okay?
All right. Well, we thank you for that, John.
Yeah,
welcome. Absolutely. Well, let me bring Wendell on here. Wendell, you kind of came in really late, so I don't know how much, maybe you've been listening through your computer, I don't know. But welcome to the show, and I hope you call back in again. Tonight we had a very heavy show. It was about, and the reason why I chose this as a topic is because it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. The problem is just getting huge, where there's so much, you know, problems at home between partners. And then, of course, what does that do? That brings in the children, and we are the Stop Child Abuse Now show. So if children, you know, see what their mommy and daddies or the mommy and that boyfriend, whatever, and mommies, be careful out there when you choose your boyfriends. It's gotten to the point you better do a background check on them, and I'm serious, for real with that. Yeah. You know, find out who you're going out with. Children, they don't forget what they see, and they too, again, they suffer from PTSD if it's too volatile. You know, they see all kinds of things. And trauma is trauma. We don't take a yardstick to it here, you know, on NASCA. Because even if a person is, say, violated one time, whether it be physical, mental, emotional, sexual, whatever, that's trauma, okay? Or
yes.
In the hundreds of times, that's trauma. Well, it doesn't matter the amount. It matters the effect of what it has on the individual. So remember, you know, if you've been hurt, all right, for God's sake, go get help and free yourself. Because I had a guy, another one, the other night, and all he was talking about basically was what he was holding inside from the past, and he can't quite get rid of it. And there's a lot of people like that out there. I thought he was someone else that I'd spoken to before that. I'm getting a lot of calls from men lately from, you know, who are hurting. And I'm glad the men are speaking out, because for so long, men couldn't speak out. They just couldn't, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't
right.
The cool thing to do, all right? You know, so
right.
Man up, forget about it. You know, it'll go away. It doesn't go away. It gets worse, okay? Because as you get older, you have more time to think, and you have more time to feel emotionally from what happened from the past. So this is why I recommend that you get a therapist, you know, who understands child abuse, and also too, you know, go to the programs that I listed, and then listen to what John just said. He gave out a couple of telephone numbers there. So you know, there was an interesting show. I want to thank the people that called in. And Wendell, I'm not familiar with you. Have you ever been on the show before? Or have you ever listened before?
No, actually, this is my first time. I was actually invited by Michelle to call in to listen on the show.
Okay.
And,
well,
I have to apologize that I overlooked the time. She mentioned it starts at 8, and I was watching the program, and then I realized.
Yeah.
And sorry, I did meant to call in about that.
Well, you guys are all welcome back at any time, okay?
Yeah.
This is NASCA, and I just want you to, you know, to know that I'm very happy that you called in. You took an interest, okay? And on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we have, you know, shows like this, very similar. You know, we have a survivor professional come on, like Michelle. She's a chaplain. She's an ordained minister. She's a licensed counselor. I'm a counselor and so forth. But she's a licensed counselor. She's got a lot of background. And, of course, one thing that we all have in common is that, you know, we're survivors.
Amen.
And, again, who better to treat, you know, to teach people, to teach people, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, Michelle, you have 2 minutes to talk, and then I have to end the show because the show flew by, and I didn't even get to half of my information here. So, okay. I always have to make sure I have a lot. So go ahead. Maybe you'd like to finish off the show. Give people hope,
Michelle. I just want to say for anyone who is listening, just know that you're not alone. That's what we're here for. And if no one didn't tell you today that they love you, I want you to know that God loves you and that I love you. And you probably say, we don't know me. I don't have to know you. I love you. Carol loves you. John loves you. This is what we're for. My number, my name is Michelle Bless. I am on the website along with Carol Levine, and I have my email there, and I have my phone number. You can call me 24 hours a day. If when you call, if I don't answer, it's not because I'm ignoring you. I probably doze off, but I guarantee if you text my phone, if you text me, and I'll see that text, I will, because I get a beep in my ear from a text faster than I do a phone call. I don't know why it's like that, but it's like that. But I will immediately respond back to you. And I'm going to leave with 2 scriptures, which is Jeremiah 29, verses 11 through 14, and Psalms 91. And just know that you are absolutely loved. This was a great show, Carol.
Well, thank you. And you certainly helped make a great year. Yes, you did. And I thank, again, everyone that called in because, you know, it makes the show more lively, plus the fact it shows that you know, that you want to learn those who don't understand child abuse. And you can pass it along to someone else, okay? Whatever you pick up here, you can pass it along to someone else. Have them, give them the website. That's it. You know, naasca.org, nasca.org, so that they, too, can become informed about child abuse, okay? So, it was a good show. And I'm going to be getting the 90-second cue in just a second here. And next time, Michelle, I'd like you to talk about your abuse with the, you know, what was it? Who? You had so many abuses. So did I.
Oh, girl.
We can go eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
We
can go eeny, meeny. How you denounce Satan, okay? Because you had so much in your history, okay, about, with those.
Unfortunately, I was
the
satanic.
Yes.
Yeah.
And because you know what?
Yeah.
I've got news for you people. There's a lot of that out there.
There's a lot going on.
I better not say what I was going to say. I think there's certain groups out there, okay, that are political. Yeah, that's where Satan is. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to say any more than that, I promise. I'm not allowed to. Michelle knows what I'm talking about. But
I do.
It is something, I know you do, but it is something that it's something that so many people don't realize that there's all these satanic things going on out there and that a lot of children, you know, have been brought up in that. So she's going to be on the first Thursday, you know, of every month, and she was nice enough to come on tonight, and I love it when Michelle's here. She's my sister.
And Carol.
I love her to death. Yes.
And Carol, can I also one thing, too, is that
you know,
I love everybody that's here, and there's no question I'll always be here for the rest of my life. But, you know, that being that I'm also a vice president of an organization called SCSA, and you bring it up to men's support, right? And this is what I do. I had the men's support division. So we do have a meeting every Saturday at 3 o'clock, every Saturday at 3 o'clock. So if you are listening, and if NASCA isn't, you know, something that you find and you want to explore other areas, I will be there on both sides, okay? in order to make you feel welcome. Okay? Yeah,
right.
And you'd have to go into the website and punch in the www.scsaorg.org. Okay?
Okay. All right.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that. And, okay, everyone, I have to close the show down. I'm a little bit late here, so good night. God bless you. Watch your back. Watch everybody's back. Good night. We had a great show.
Good night,
thank
y'all.
You, Michelle. Yeah, thank you so much.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Talk Radio.